This is URN. The Film Show Breakdown.
Hello everyone, welcome back to The Film Show. This week we have our animation special. But first, I thought it would be appropriate if we addressed what was going on in the world. I think we missed it last week as it was only just starting to get vitriolic over in the US. But obviously I think it's something that is very important for us to... I wouldn't want us to ignore it. The official statement put out by the URN Instagram is, in the wake of the injustice of George Floyd's death and numerous hashtag Black Lives Matter protests happening all over the world, URN stands in solidarity with our black broadcasters, producers, artists, and the black community as a whole. And that obviously extends for us to filmmakers and important films, and I think we're going to try to recommend some at the end of the show. I just wanted to say that we obviously support the protests going on right now, and I think it was a horrific injustice. I don't think anyone... That's not a controversial opinion to have, I don't believe.
Remotely.
But we do have something... We have actually, I think, a very light-hearted episode in comparison to everything going on. We're talking about animation.
I think that's sort of what our role is here, is to try and say, like, these are things you can get your mind off all the terrible things that are happening.
Yeah,
these are the
absolutely.
Things to relax with and, you know, to enjoy rather than anything else.
I do think some of the films we are talking about can be quite serious at times. I've seen some of it.
Rip off the notes I have.
That's not a bad thing, of course, because as a medium, I think it is woefully underappreciated in terms of what important art it can be. Now, I personally, I think I have some relatively, they are family-oriented films, but there is darker messages hidden in them. Not even hidden, sorry.
I think I'm the same, yeah.
But I think Isaac and Ben, from what you were saying on the group chat, the couple of yours are actually addressing important topics, which I'm very excited to hear about.
Can I address something very quickly?
Yeah, of course, go ahead.
As well. Can we just welcome the triumphant return of Lizzie?
I was getting to that, Isaac. It was all part of the plan. Yeah, welcome back, Lizzie.
I blew it.
I'm happy to be back. I'm so excited to be doing this, even if it's in lockdown. So. It's exciting. It's good to be back.
Yeah. Hope you're doing well, Lizzie.
I am, thanks.
And who is joining Lizzie this week? Starting with, to the left of my screen, Joseph.
Good afternoon.
Isaac.
Good afternoon.
And Ben.
Hello, everyone.
This week, we are doing, as I said, animated films in the order of traditional animation in the first section, stop motion in the second section, and CG animated films, which is the standard today, in the third section. And first up, as I said, is hand-drawn traditional. It can be enhanced by CG, of course. Does anyone particular want to go first? Don't all speak at once. I can start, because I've brought an interesting film to talk about. It's called Spirited Away. Do we know what this is?
We do.
Yeah, I've seen that.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the interesting thing is, at least for me, is that I'm not really into anime or anything like that. I don't really watch it. So I've sort of had this preconceived idea that I wouldn't really be interested in Studio Ghibli films, which is the producer of this and many other traditionally animated Japanese films. So I sort of didn't really pay attention to it, but I've heard about it before. And in fact, fun story, in a Spanish class, of all things, in year 8, they actually put on, it must have been in the summer, they actually put on Spirited Away. The teacher put on Spirited Away for our Spanish class to watch. Now, of course, being like a bunch of year 8s, we just weren't really interested in watching it. And we just talked and messed about throughout the whole thing. So, ever since then, I just assumed I didn't like the film. Because technically, I'd seen an hour of it before. But I've heard, you know, people talking about it, and it was getting, it got good reviews and everything. And then Netflix released like a bunch of Studio Ghibli films. I finally rewatched it after nearly 10 years. Yeah, nearly 10 years, and yeah, it's actually really fantastic. And in some ways, I feel bad about underappreciating it before, but I don't know if I would have liked it if I watched it. Actually, I probably would have liked it if I watched it all the way through when I was younger. You know, I actually sat down and gave it a chance. And I think it applies to a lot of Studio Ghibli films that I think people should, if they actually give them a chance, they would really enjoy them. Not just as family films, but as works of art. You know, last week when we did the genre challenge, I think parts of this would count as dark fantasy.
Could do.
I can agree with that, having seen that. Yeah, I think it is very much a dark fantasy film in a lot of ways. Yeah.
For people who haven't seen Spirited Away, what's it about, Jamie?
Well, a family is moving to a new city, and along the way, they get tempted to stop at this abandoned carnival sort of thing. And while they're there, the parents get trapped there, and the girl is left to just sort of explore this world on her own. They unintentionally have crossed into the spirit world, and now the girl is forced to stay there while the parents are trapped in pig form, which is sort of a spoiler, but it's also on the poster. I don't really want to go into too much details past that, but there's some fantastic use of imagination from the creators of the, you know, from Studio Ghibli, which is just an absolute joy to watch as it unfolds. Who else has seen it?
I saw it in the first year of my university, which was about like 5 years ago now. So I've only seen it once, but it definitely leaves an impression. I remember I struggled with it because I think I didn't quite grasp everything and understand it at the time. I think if I went back and watched it now, I'd like it more. So now that they're on Netflix, I might go and do that actually. But it's amazing to look at. I mean, any Studio Ghibli film is really, they're just works of art, as you know, a lot of animation is, and it shouldn't be overlooked as, you know, a family or a children's genre.
You've brought a Studio Ghibli film to talk about.
I have actually. Yeah. my film, go on.
No, go ahead.
I was going to say my film is Kiki's Delivery Service, which is also a Studio Ghibli film. Which kind of tells the story of a young witch, Kiki, who moves to a new town when she's 13, and she's going to make a living out of her ability to fly. Her ability as a witch, there's different abilities I think they can have, and hers is flying. And she ends up kind of helping sort of deliver things. She becomes a delivery service. She starts out by helping a baker to deliver goods, and then she kind of starts delivering lost items to people and things like that. And I don't really want to say any more than that. It's quite a simple story, but I think what I really like about Kiki is the whole film really is kind of about finding your passion and understanding what makes you. And I think you can only really get that through watching the film, so I won't try and spoil that for people in any kind of way. It's great. I think it's a really warming watch. I think it's really important. I think it's does a lot about kind of discovery and the kind of inner peace you can find with that. The director Hayao Miyazaki, he himself said that it was about the kind of gulf between independence and reliance in teenage Japanese girls. And so it is about that kind of stage between becoming more independent and kind of trying to figure out how you're going to do things on your own versus the reliance of kind of like stability and family units or like found family units as well. So I think it's a great film to watch at kind of any age, I think. I think that message of kind of figuring out how to move forward and what to find within yourself is pretty important at various stages of life, which is why I think it's such a great film.
So what was I going to say? Oh, yeah, it's not the other Studio Ghibli film that I've seen. That would be Howl's Moving Castle, which I also recommend people try as well, but I definitely prefer Spirited Away. How do you think Kiki's Delivery Service like matches up to everything else, Lizzie, in Studio Ghibli's catalogue?
I mean, I've not seen many of them, to be honest, so I wouldn't classify myself at all as a Studio and Ghibli expert at all. I don't know enough about it. I'm quite pleased actually that all the films are on Netflix now, because it gives me a chance to watch things that I've not really been able to see before. I'd say Kiki is one of the kind of lighter ones, I'd say. I mean, I still think its message is really important, but I think that's kind of, you know, Kiki's one of these kind of films that it's cozy. You know, if you want a day that you want, it is. If you want something cozy and you want something very profound as well to watch, I'd say Kiki is the one for that. I mean, some of the visuals and some of the other films, I've seen parts of Princess Mononoke and I need to watch that properly. That's obviously very different and quite visceral and more about the environment and the stuff in Spirited Away. I think some of the visuals, because it draws on a lot of Japanese things I didn't know about, I think that was what kind of threw me off the first time, whereas I think now I would appreciate it more. I think I got on better with Howl's Moving Castle because that had, for me personally, that has more of like a European look to it. So I think I tapped into that more just because that's what I'm used to in film. So if you kind of want a starting point and you think I'm not sure where to go with this and I don't know much about Japanese media, maybe start with Howl's and then kind of branch out further and further.
That's a really good recommendation.
Yeah, if you feel like you want to kind of dip your toes into the Studio Ghibli, which is like I'm trying to do. But other than that, then, you know, go and watch all these other films. I mean, Spirited Away is an amazing film. And, you know, I mean, there's lots of, I'd love to see things like, you know, My Neighbor Totoro. I really want to watch that. That's on my list.
Ben, what film have you brought to talk about for Traditionally Animated?
I have brought Persepolis, which is, I'll give a quick plot summary. So it's Margie, who is an Iranian woman looking, I mean, the film starts with her sort of looking back at her life during the Iranian war, the Iranian Revolution, then the subsequent Iran and Iraq war. And sort of looking back at her childhood through those periods and her eventual, I guess, escape from Iran during, I mean, she leaves twice, once to continue with her high school and her education, especially after she becomes a bit too, well, I guess what would be classed as a bit too liberalized in the community where she was at. And then she returns, but then sort of departs again. So it's a beautiful film because I don't think I've seen that many films that depict the horrors of war in as brilliant a way as this is done. I mean, it's clear where the biases lie with regards to what the filmmakers think about the revolution and the Iraqi war, but I don't think they ever let the internal politics of it all sort of affect how they choose to tell the story. So it's very much about her. It's very much about her family, and it's very much about how they sort of viewed it and viewed everything that was going on. So it does that really well. It's a difficult topic, but it's done in a way that is still, it's not overly melancholic. It's still quite funny at times. It's directed by Marjan Satrapi, who also sort of wrote the graphic novel that it's based on. It's beautiful because it's predominantly uses the two color palettes, black and white. She does that to keep it as close as possible to the graphic novel, which she created. And what that does is, although it's, you know, two very, simple colors, what they do with the animation and how inventive it is and how they create sort of otherworldly objects around it is stunning at times.
I'm looking at images of it now, and it's such a unique looking film.
Oh yeah,
and this is maybe one of my favorite animated films of all time. Like, I was actually considering talking about this in this segment of the show. I think it's like you were saying, Ben. I completely agree. It shows the horrors of stuff like revolution and war, but I think it is also very funny at times. I think that kind of, it has like real levity to it, and it is a great coming of age story because it's like the time frame you could say is like the late 70s to like, you know, the early 90s.
But I mean, it is very personal to Marjan Satrapi, sort of, it's her life essentially, so it is very personal to her, and it, I would assume, has a lot of autobiographical elements to it, but it isn't done in a documentary style. The animation techniques are also very interesting because she tried to keep it as close to being a graphic novel as it is, so she didn't use any complex animated techniques or or anything like that. It very much is just, you know, it kind of feels like a comic book as well, especially with how extravagant they go with some of the things that they animate, which I find quite amusing. And it's never distracting as well, because sometimes it does get quite grand, but it all sort of adds context to the story. And I think it keeps everything consistent. So unlike other films where it can feel sort of superfluous to add so many elements, this sort of just adds context to the story.
Interestingly, Isaac, you said you wanted to do this, right? This was your other choice. So what did you end up going with?
So I've made a bit of a mistake the past few weeks, and even though I recommend stuff where you can access them online, whether for free or, you know, through streaming service, I don't directly say where. So I'm going to say for the first one here, you can watch this on YouTube for free in HD. Okay. I'm going to recommend the Oscar-nominated short film Rejected by Don Hertzfeldt.
Right.
I've talked to him a couple of times on the show. I think all of you know he's my favorite animator working today, with stuff like It's Such a Beautiful Day and his World of Tomorrow shorts. But Rejected is kind of a very important film for me personally, because it was maybe the first thing I ever watched on YouTube back in like 2006 or 7, or at least the first piece of animation. And it is my favorite short, the animated short. And again, it doesn't have that much of a plot. Again, it's just, you could say it's just a collection of just like fake adverts and just promos for this thing called the Family Learning Channel, which keeps popping up. But with that, like kind of sort of, you know, the absurdity and the surrealism, and, you know, the comedy that can get quite violent and dark, like, even because this film is a massive inspiration for my sense of humor. I think the film, watching it over and over, you kind of see that it's kind of a joke on consumerism and a kind of, you know, a critique of it and marketing, and maybe that kind of struggle of like art versus commerce, because it's kind of inspired by Don Hertzfeldt's like own issues with, you know, sort of, you know, advertising and being asked to do adverts in his style and him rejecting it, unintended. but again, in its surrealism and its absurdity, it is really hilarious. It's also immensely quotable, like classic lines like, my spoon is too big, I'm a banana, I'm feeling fat and sassy, I am the Queen of France, and my own personal favorite, my anus is bleeding. I think this may be one of the best animated shorts of all time, and you can watch it free on YouTube. Yeah, it's like one of the early kind of precursors to like a kind of style of YouTube humor, or just, you know, modern day humor in general. Because it was one of the first massive like hits on YouTube, even though it was made like years prior to YouTube.
Perfect. Sorry, Joseph, you've drawn the short straw this round. quickly, what is your recommended film?
So I'm going to go for the 2017 winner of Best Animated Short Film at the Academy Awards, which was The Basketball. It was the short film made about Kobe Bryant's career, looking back on him growing up and coming towards his retirement from basketball. It's basically his tribute to his career for the fans of the LA Lakers. And this film is sort of like, it's become more greatly important over time, because after the tragic events of Kobe Bryant's untimely death earlier this year, it's sort of like it's possessed a new meaning to it. And it's a very emotionally heavy film.
Yeah.
It's only about 7 minutes long, but it's sort of like the intertwining of the emotional words, it's sort of done in like as like a letter, sort of like a poem kind of narration to it, with this beautiful hand-drawn animation going from shooting tube socks into his into a basket in his room, to, you know, playing in front of large crowds at the height of his career that he was at. It's an incredible film, one of the best things, like short films, I've ever seen in my life, one of the most beautiful animated things you'll ever see, and it's available to watch on YouTube, so please do check it out.
Now we're going to talk about some stop motion films in our animated special, starting with Joseph.
All right. Yeah, so I watched this film the other night. I haven't seen it before, but I've been into it for a long time. It's the most recent film from Aardman. It's a film called Early Man. It's about the beginning of the Stone Age and it's sort of about this rabbit hunting tribe who have their sort of like village taken away by this like major new kind of like ultra rich village to hunt, to like mine diamonds. So they get moved to the Badlands sort of thing, and the way to get their way back is through beating them at their own game. So they play, like a version of football anyway. And the chances for the townsfolk to beat the world megastars of this new village to get to stop them from spending their lives down the mine working for them, and instead go back to their normal lives. It's a really sort of like really energetic film. It's really charming as well. It's got that classic kind of sense of humour and style that you come to expect from Aardman, from stuff like Chicken Run and Wallace and Gromit. But it's sort of like, it's one of those things that's been sort of missing from cinema for a long time, because those films were from the 2000s, you know, to bring that to new audiences. And I do think this film appeals perfectly to the modern audience, even though it's, you know, it's portraying a life, thousands and thousands of years ago, which was its intention.
It was made by the people who made Wallace and Gromit, right?
Yeah, Nick Park was the director of it, who created Wallace and Gromit as well. And you do get that sense of humour, like the plot is very much taken from, if you've seen the first ever episode of the Shaun the Sheep series on CBBC, it's pretty much the exact same plot as that. So they're very creative with their kind of like styles and stuff. But I feel like it's probably their greatest kind of exploration in terms of like production design and cinematography of their style that we've seen before, because of the technological advances to it. So like the football scenes are incredible. It's like this full arena, it's like gladiatorial style of it. It's brilliant to look at. It's got great performances from Eddie Redmayne, and Richard Ayoade steals the show. He's brilliant. It's like this embarrassed son. It's great. And you have this really hammy performance from Tom Hiddleston as the villain, a very classic Aardman villain as well. I think it clocks in at about 75 minutes, because if you don't count the credits. So it's a very, very easy watch.
Nice.
And it's got stuff definitely for the older viewer as well. You can see some of the references in there to stuff. So yeah, it's very, very good, very entertaining. I don't think it's their best work by any means, but it's something new to watch.
I think it flies under the radar a little bit.
Oh yeah, for sure. Yeah, because it was sort of like released at a bad time, because it's like January, February time. The way cinemas work, that's when all the award stuff comes out. So it's very difficult to find yourself out of that crowd. I think it was February half term it might have been released during. So. But it's probably one of the most underrated works for sure.
Fair enough. Isaac, what have you brought to talk about?
I brought another Aardman film which you can watch on Amazon Prime. I'm recommending the Shaun the Sheep movie.
Oh really? I thought that's okay. Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, I just thought like I would have done Curse the Were-Owl, but this is available for anybody who has
the highest grossing stop motion film of all time, Curse of the Were-Owl.
Very deservingly.
Probably my most seen film as well, though.
Yeah. So tell us about the Shaun the Sheep film, Isaac.
Well, it's actually a very simple plot. Like, you know, Shaun and all the sheep and, you know, the dog from the children's series. Sorry, Joseph?
Bitzer,
that's his name. They go to the big city to rescue their farmer who, after their mischief, loses memory and, you know, becomes a famous hairdresser. I think, like Joseph said with Aardman, like even though it is for families, it's not like it means families. It means anybody can enjoy these films. I'm a grown man and I really enjoyed this film, not just because it's Shaun the Sheep, who is a character I love, and I love Wallace and Gromit and I love Aardman, but it is really, really understands comedy, like a Jacques Tati or someone like that. You know, that kind of, even though it's not a silent film, it kind of takes inspiration from silent cinema, and it's kind of the kind of universality of something like slapstick humor or sort of using comedy through action rather than in dialogue. Like, there's a scene sort of in a restaurant which is just really funny. There's like, when early in the film when they just want to take a day off, and the way they try to get that day off, and you know, is just really clever. It's like, weirdly, that reminds me a couple of times like a prison film, like it's like the Great Escape or something. That kind of, you know, that kind of uplifting attitude. And there's like a really, I think my favorite scene in the film is just, there's the little sheep Timmy who has his own series for CBeebies, I think. And you know, when he's all sad, they all sing kind of a bar bar, get it, barbershop quartet sort of song. And it's really funny because, you know, they go bar and then there's like the baritone and there's the tenor and all that. But it's like really, really nice and heartwarming. And again, like you said, I think you got that kind of kids humor with the slapstick, but there's an adult joke, which I was really surprised by. Like, there's a scene when the farmer is in a photo shoot because now he's a famous hairdresser, and it's like a montage of all the photos, and he's sitting behind a chair naked like Christine Keeler, and I was like, this is a kids film, and you're referencing like a really, really like dark scandal that happened in the 60s, and that kind of my sense of humor, that was like the thing that made me laugh the most. It's kind of like Inside Out when they reference Chinatown. It's like, it's a kid's film. Where's this coming from? But I would say if you have Amazon Prime or you have children or younger siblings, it's not up there with the Wallace and Gromit works or something like Chicken Run, but it is like really solid stuff. And I'm not just saying that because I support stop motion. I love stop motion, but I think Aardman and this film's understanding of comedy is better than a lot of comedies, regardless of, you know, animation or live action, whatever. So, yeah, I'd recommend it. And again, it's a very easy film to watch. It's less than 90 minutes. So if you have Amazon, just pop it in. You want some good laughs, want some, you know, silly moments, Shaun the Sheep. Also, the stream tune is in it, which is very good to see.
Yeah. Catchy. I can catchy. Hear it now in my sheep. Head.
It's show the sheep.
Ben, what have you brought to talk about? It's like show and tell, isn't it?
So I have My Life as a Courgette, or My Life as a Zucchini. So Oscar-nominated film. It won Celine Sciamma her best adapted screenplay at the Caesars, as well as winning the best animated film. And what it's about, it's about a nine-year-old kid called, well, he's self-titled Courgette, much like, you know, Lady Bird, but you know, his story is unique. So he's befriended by a police officer after his mother passes away, and the police officer sort of accompanies him to an orphanage where he's placed with kids around his age. So at first struggling to sort of find his place and make friends in what is a pretty hostile environment, he's able to find, you know, friendship. He's able to find, some place to really call home, whether it's via the friends he makes or you know, the connection that he makes outside of that. I mean, very simply put, I could, you know, it really is just a story about love, or trying to find love from various types of relationships, whether it's a parental sort of love, which, although he lacks with his actual parent, he finds with the police officer, whether it's romantic love, where when he meets a girl called Camille who comes in and is also an orphan, or whether it's other various types of friendships that exist all around this film. It's very, very beautiful. So I think it's a very sort of deeply moving account of what it's like as an orphan, but not sort of in the traditional depressing way, but really in a heartfelt and occasionally happy one. It only has a runtime of about 65 minutes. So with that, it's like very precise in what it decides to tell you about these characters, but that doesn't limit their depth or anything. It's like in a line or two, we're told what draws Raymond to Courgette, for instance. And, you know, we get told about each orphan's predicament rather quickly as well, but that the rest is revealed in a rather show and not tell sort of format. So we see the after effects of the damaged homes that they've come from, but it never really dwells on that part of their story. Rather, it prefers to, you know, rightly shine a light on the relationships that they formed in the orphanage. So it's I think with stop motion, so often, because it's a very stiff type of animation, really hard to convey, I guess, the emotion of the characters. But how that's done here is, I think the writing is some of the best from Celine. And what she does, which is really symptomatic of most of her films, is, you know, the bad guys or the antagonists that you'd so often think are, you know, unlikable, they always have a redeemable quality, and they sort of become the hero. I mean, in this film, that, you know, Simon, who is initially the sort of bully, ends up being kind of the hero of the film. And you could argue he's as part of the, you know, the protagonist story as anyone, really. And yeah, so it's a very beautiful film, and the last sort of 10 minutes of the film, well, it certainly left me in pieces, and I'm pretty sure it would leave like most people.
Yeah, I watched this film for the show on BFI Player, and yeah, it got me in the feels.
It's a beautiful film, and it's 65 minutes. Like you can.
Sounds like Joseph's cup of tea right there.
But yeah, you can get it. I'm pretty sure it's on every streaming platform, and you should watch it. It's a very good hour of film.
Oh, nice one. Lizzie?
Okay, so I've brought the sort of latest out of Leica, which is Missing Link, which came out last year. I really felt that Missing Link went under the radar somehow. I feel that there was such a hype around their previous film, Kubo and the Two Strings, and then Missing Link came out, and I didn't feel it got as enough attention, really. And it's absolutely brilliant. I've seen it about three times now. It is about Sir Lionel Frost in 1886. He's a struggling investigator of mythical creatures, and he's kind of continuously searched for all kind of different creatures, and particularly undiscovered creatures, to get him into the Society of Great Men, which is basically kind of like a sort of explorer's guild, which is led by his rival, Lord Piggott Dunsby, who is voiced wonderfully by Stephen Fry. And Sir Lionel receives a letter acknowledging the presence of a Sasquatch, and he basically goes out to find the Sasquatch, which he does find. I'm pretty sure this is in the trailer, so I think I can say it. It basically turns out that the Sasquatch can read and write. He's sent the letter, and he would like some help to find other Sasquatches. He's on his own.
I feel like the reason it flew under the radar is because it sort of looks like an Illumination film. From the promotional material.
Yeah, I kind of wonder whether that's what put me on, I think. Because I kind of saw it, and I really liked Leica, and it did feel like it flew under the radar for me. And then one day I thought, you know, I'll just try it. And it is brilliant. It's so fun.
It certainly doesn't look like Kubo and the Two Strings.
No, it doesn't. It's a slightly different thing. You can still tell it's Leica's animation style when you... But what I enjoy about Leica so much is I do feel that, unlike other animation companies, and we have talked about this at length, about similarity in, you know, Disney's animation and at times even Pixar's animation, I really feel that Leica, while it's distinct, they are very good at getting different facial types and structures and kind of different things out of their characters. And so it doesn't look like every single other Leica film, which I like. I feel like saying like is too much now, but it's brilliant. I don't want to say much more about it other than that they end up going on an adventure to try and find the Sasquatches. It's really, really good. It's fantastic, kind of, you know, it's like a family action adventure. It's got, you know, like geographical explorers. I don't know what else you want out of a film, really. That sounds great to me. I think it does amazing stuff with the voice work. I think it really knows how to use Hugh Jackman. There was something in the first opening section of the film, family and I watched it, and they kind of went, who's voicing this guy? And then this one thing happened, and they went, oh, it's Hugh Jackman, yeah. Isn't it? And I was like, yeah, it is. They know exactly what to get out of him. Zach Galifianakis as well is great as the voice of the Sasquatch. Zoe Saldana as Adelina, who turns up partway through the adventure. And even also Timothy Oliphant, I'm never sure how you say his name, I apologise, who, as I understand it, has sort of disappeared off into the world of justice now on television, which I don't watch. He does great work as Willard Stenck, who is a sort of... a bounty hunter who's sent after Sir Lionel Frost. It's just a great film. It's kind of all about environment and kind of, I guess, as well, sort of to do with the corruption of kind of colonial rule, which I'm always for, you know, good for that. I'm not for the colonial rule, I'm for dissecting colonial rule, just to be clear. it's great. And I think, like a lot of the films we've been talking about, you can get a lot of out of it if you're a younger viewer, I think, especially with Mr. Link, the Sasquatch voiced by Galifianakis. And I think if you're an adult, you'll get more out of, you know, certainly the development of Sir Lionel Frost, who kind of turns out, he starts off as quite a sort of awful person in a lot of ways and has to do some serious growth throughout the film. And I know, I think there's lots to get out of it. And I
Lizzie, you're telling me that Galifianakis is playing as...
Yes. Exactly. That's the thing. This whole film
is not motion. It's not just live action. It's not just like a fly on the wall documentary. Nah. I love you, Zach.
All right, fantastic.
Yeah, it's great.
I will very quickly give my recommendation. Sorry, I had some audio issues then. I will very quickly give my recommendation, which is Coraline, the third highest grossing stop motion film of all time. Does anyone want to guess the second? Can anyone guess what the second highest grossing?
Chicken Run?
Yeah, have you looked it up?
No, I just guessed.
Yeah, it's Chicken Run. But yeah, I think a much better film in Coraline, adapted from the Neil Gaiman novel of the same name. And that was a bit of a tongue twister. Yeah, the Neil Gaiman novel of the same name. Yeah, it's fantastic. It's like we were talking about earlier, it's a dark fantasy. It's a horror film, but it's also weirdly really easy to watch. I don't know if that's helped by the medium of stop motion. Even though stop motion, we've talked about previously, is a restrictive platform for animation, it's almost as if stop motion in this sense allows them to explore the creepier aesthetic a little bit more. It almost gives them more freedom in how they design the more horrific elements and the more disturbing elements, while still keeping this sort of layer between the audience and the horror of what you're watching. Like, nothing too actual horrific happens. It is more about the tone of the film. But I mean, in the sense that the medium of stop motion both allows them to display the horror and also keep it a step away from reality, if that makes sense. Like, you don't get to... It's distant enough from the real world. I don't really know how to describe it.
Like, I think I know what you're...
Like, if this was in live action, it would be even more disturbing. Especially when you see some of the creatures come to life, if that makes sense.
So, I mean, I'm a fan of Coraline, and I think what you're kind of getting at, particularly in the design, is a lot of, like, the proportions, I think, are, like, just slightly off. And I think that's what lends it being, like, out of this world, like kind of distant from reality, but still being...
Uncanny Valley, that sort of thing.
Yeah, definitely, yeah.
What was I gonna say? Yeah, it's really good. Really good voice performances as well. And I don't know if there's anyone.
Keith David, isn't it? Isn't he?
As
the cat.
And so cat. Is French and Saunders. They have a cameo role. Well, it's next to cameo role. But yeah, there's not really much I can say about it. And I want to wrap up the section a bit there, because if you haven't seen Coraline, watch it very soonish if you're wanting to see a classic animated film, a modern classic of an animated film. And now we're going to talk about the standard for all, I think, modern animated films, which is CG. And we will start with... Ben, do you want to start? Do you have a computer-generated film you want to talk about?
I do have a computer-generated film that I want to talk about. This computer-generated film that I want to talk about is I Lost My Body. And it's it blew me away when I saw it the first time, because I don't know what I expected, because each time I saw the trailer, I knew there was a hand involved, but I didn't know. that's all I really knew. So watching the first time, and I think I've watched it a couple times since, breathtaking film, honestly. I think this is, this is an amazing film. So it's how do I even explain it? Because So in a Parisian laboratory, there's a severed hand which escapes from its unhappy fate and it sets out to reconnect with its body, right? And it's so there are different time frames in this film. There's a time frame where the hand, which has been severed, is it's on its own, and the film is split half and half between when it's with its body and when it's not. But it's also, the frequent flashbacks as to when he's a kid. So it's trying to reconnect with its owner. And through this, it's essentially, you can look at it as a film that asks the question about free will and determinism, because our main character, Nufel, has pretty much been beaten up by life repeatedly. And he is constantly sort of he seems to be getting the tough treatment by life, and he decides to change it. He decides to do something crazy to change it because, you know, that's kind of what he believes is going to change his fate. But, you know, the film sort of skillfully weaves in and out of time periods, you know, and I think there's so many concepts in this film that feel groundbreaking because essentially, like I said, they're half of this film, we're viewing it through the protagonist, which is the hand, which means that there is no sound, or at least there is no, you know, the hand isn't speaking. But that doesn't sort of take away from any emotions that we feel for it, because it's still, even when it's just the hand, it's still very, it's really, I can feel how weird it is explaining a film about a hand.
Yeah, it does sound interesting.
But overall, the film just, it feels like a puzzle because it introduces, you know, introduces this very, very many parts. And it's only until the last quarter of the film where they all sort of intersect, and it's very inspiring. And yeah, I mean, I'd recommend this film. I don't think I've done the best job at like, at like explaining everything. It's a bit tricky, but it is a beautiful film. I'll leave with, you know, this quote by the director, Jeremy Clapton, who says, "The film is an urban modern fairy tale about destiny and resilience. And it tells us that to change things, we must surprise ourselves. We must dare to do something unusual and stray from the straight and narrow path." And I think that really is the best way to define this film. So yeah, I'd recommend it. It's on Netflix, and it really is a breathtaking film. So yeah.
Oh, fantastic. I would hate to be the one to follow up that film, so I will be the one to follow up that, because I have a much more obvious choice. I don't really have anything that profound to say about it. It's Wall-E, which I think most people have seen.
Wall-E.
Yeah, Isaac's seen it as well. Yeah, it's just a really good, like, I know it's sort of more of a mainstream or obvious choice, but there is obviously still art to be found in the mainstream corporate films, even though these days it's become so monopolized that it's not really that fun to talk about, you know, the most recent Disney or Pixar releases. Then again, it's not like, here's the thing, the point I'm trying to make is, like, there is still art in these films. Like, if you've seen Coco or Moana, which I also considered talking about, they are two very good films released under the Disney banner. Even though, you know, you don't really feel the need to recommend the biggest releases because everyone knows about them anyway. But I do want to talk about, I think a lot of the credit that Pixar and Disney have now can be traced back to, well, Pixar at least can be traced back to the 2000s, which is almost like their renaissance, like it was for Disney in the 90s, and Disney animation went like it was in the 90s. And yeah, Wall-E's just a very beautiful and obviously sometimes profound film, despite it being about a robot that goes to space. But I just find it really interesting to talk about these really big films and try and find the deeper art that's sort of like buried in them. I think most people have seen Wall-E at this point, right?
Yeah.
I think it's very interesting about the film because I think the sound was created, or I think the sound was done by Ben Burtt, who is most well known for sort of doing films like the original Star Wars trilogy and Indiana Jones.
Fantastic. We'll go to you next, Isaac.
So yeah, I didn't want to go for something. I wanted to kind of push myself a little because we all know there's a lot of great Disney and Pixar films. So I thought I'd do something a bit more obscure. I'm going to do the Captain Underpants movie. Because I remembered it existed, and I saw it was on Netflix. I'm like, I'm going to watch Captain Underpants because those books mean a lot to me when I was a kid. And it's pretty much like a adaptation of like the first few books, you know, predominantly the first one and the fourth one, I think. You know, you have the two kids, George Beard, Howard Hutchins, they hypnotize their principal, become Captain Underpants, you then gain superpowers, you know. And I know it's a bit more lighthearted in comparison to a lot of other stuff, you know, the animation, like even Wall-E, but I don't know. I was kind of trepidatious going into it because, you know, again, the Captain Underpants by Daph Pilkey are like such a big part of my childhood, especially my childhood literature. And in a way, it kind of reminded me of the Peanuts movie from a little while back, because even though it's CG for something that's known for being traditionally drawn, it still retains a lot of the, you know, a lot of the flavor. You know, this bit, like the designs are very accurate to the books. You know, the character, the nature of a, you know, it's a pretty, it's not perfect, but it's a pretty solid adaptation of like the series in general. And yeah, it's interesting what they do. Again, it's pretty much an origin story. So, you know, if you've seen an origin story like Superman or Spider-Man, you've seen this film, except with a different, you know, different few jokes. But I think they really, they've made like a really, really just decent Captain Underpants film. You know, there's the villain Professor Poppy, Poopy Pants, I think he was called, I think from the fourth book. And the voice acting is really sort of like, again, it's well-known actors. You know, you have Kevin Hart and Nick Kroll and people like that. And even Jordan Peele is like kind of like the as like Melvin, he's kind of like that George and Harold's nemesis. He's kind of like a nerdy type, kind of like the kid in The Simpsons. But you know, when Captain Underpants goes, oh, what's his name?
What, Milhouse?
Not Milhouse, the other nerd.
What?
Martin Prince.
Very much like Martin Prince. But yeah, when Ed Helms go as Captain Underpants goes, I'm like, that is Captain Underpants to me. You know, that's as good casting as like Patrick Stewart as Professor X or Hugh Jackman as Wolverine in terms of superhero casting. It's just good. So it's kind of nice in a way. You know, it's a very relatively gentle film to watch, and again, it's less than 90 minutes. And I think the best achievement of the film is that it makes potty humor endearing.
Nice one.
And toilet humor.
Thank you, Isaac. Joseph.
Yeah. I feel like I was thinking about things to watch, but I was looking through my Letterboxd account because I used to do reviews on there. I don't know anymore, but yeah. It's been a common theme of recent shows because I can't bother to revisit stuff. So I just look at what I originally said. And then the last review I did on there was of Zootopia. And all Zootopia, right. I remember seeing at the time when it first came out. I think it came out like February, March time. And I said to myself, if this doesn't make my top 10 of this year, then it's going to be like a phenomenal year for film. And it ended up being my fourth favorite film that year.
So was it not a phenomenal phenomenal
level of films that year?
What year was it?
2016. No, it was a great year, 2016.
Great year for film.
Yeah, but Zootopia is a great film and it has every right to be up there. I feel like it has a greater importance than a lot of the other kind of recent films that have been made by Disney and Pixar and such. Because it has a lot to say about society, it's very inclusive. It's got really bright colours, and sort of like its accessibility to a story that sort of plays like a cop thriller sort of thing.
Like a buddy cop.
And I feel like it reinforces positive kind of things about for potential role models for younger children. About not letting poverty stand in your way and wanting to achieve your dreams, and also the opposites can work together when not doing so. When you have the classic sort of like villain versus protagonist kind of interaction in animated films, it's very much one dimensional. But with this, there's so many ways to between Judy Harps and between the fox played by and Jason Bateman, which I can't remember the name of. But
Nick, I think he's called Nick.
I think Jason Bateman really helps with that casting as well. He's a really, really charming kind of character, and because it goes into sort of his past, you sort of like understand some kind of incentives and stuff and lifestyle choices. But it's just one of those really, really good feel good films that has a bit of bite to it, more than anything else. And you know, by the time it finishes and it has a really nice conclusion to it, it leaves you smiling afterwards, which is, I think, massively important at these times.
Oh, perfect. Thank you. Yeah. I've also seen Zootopia and would recommend it.
Yeah, same. It's one of my favourite films. It's really, really good.
No.
Can I ask a very important question about it? Do you think the film's success was because of the furry community?
No.
No.
Thank you. And now, the triumphant return of Lizzie. She's going to finish off the recommendations portion of the show. What do you want to talk about, Lizzie?
Well, I also didn't want to go for Disney and Pixar, so I've gone for Sony, because they did make a good film, and it's called Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse, which I think we've all seen, or I hope so.
Yep.
It's brilliant. Obviously, it's a Spider-Man film, but it's not centered around Peter Parker. It's centered around New York City teenager Miles Morales, who is kind of struggling to up to the expectations of his dad, who is a police officer named Jefferson Davis. His dad kind of sees Spider-Man, so Peter Parker is within their universe, and he sees Peter Parker as a kind of menace, and well, Spider-Man as a menace, not necessarily Peter. And Miles is kind of being a teenager. He's adjusting to boarding school. He's kind of, you know, visiting his uncle. He's kind of taking him under his wing a bit. And he ends up getting bitten by a radioactive spider, and he starts to gain spider-like abilities similar to Spider-Man. Without saying too much, because if you haven't seen this, I do not want to spoil it. Obviously, the Spider-Verse in the title suggests multiple universes and multiple spider-people. And you do get to meet different types of spider-people. They have a lot of fun with that throughout the film. I do not want to spoil any of them. They're really, really good. I think for me, this is the best Spider-Man film. I think for a long time, I like Spider-Man, but I think Spider-Man to me has always been, it's going to sound, I don't know, it's always been the property of teenage boys to me. That has been where young boys have been able to see themselves in Peter Parker. There's kind of been this idea of that, you know, Spider-Man's for the people and Spider-Man's for everyone. And it's never quite fully felt like that for me, just because it has been kind of aligned with one very specific kind of audience. But this film, with having the amount of spider people, this is where I went, oh, so anyone could be Spider-Man. Now I get it. Like, this is the film that proved to me anyone could be Spider-Man. And I think that's so powerful. And it's just fantastic. And I mean, the representation it does, I mean, when it came out, I mean, it won the Oscar, and they talked about the representation when, you know, in their speech. And, you know, you had little boys as well kind of, you know, saying, you know, look at Miles Morales. He looks like me. And, you know, feeling like they could be Spider-Man. I thought that was so empowering when it came out. And that's why it is hands down the best Spider-Man film. It's done something that none of the other ones, however good any of the other actors playing Peter Parker, have managed to achieve. And I think that's entirely down to story and the characters they've set up. The animation is amazing. It's art to watch this whole film. It's amazing. They often try to emulate the style of comic book strips. So they use kind of like specific half tones. They use something called Ben Day dots to kind of create colors and gradients, crisscross lines, lots of kind of onomatopoeia on screen. So you can get like, you know, your kapows and your bams literally on screen. It's just amazing. It's done really, really well. The attention to detail in this film is insane. It took them about, I've got this written down, when I read this, I thought it was so interesting. It said it took around a year for about two animators to create 10 seconds of footage reflected the producer's vision. So you can imagine how long it took to make this film and to go like, that's the look we want. That's what it is. I just think it's brilliant. And if you haven't seen it, I just really, really recommend it.
It emulates comic book films a lot better than Hulk 2003, which is what it's what comes to my mind when
you talk about the panels.
I love how you're comparing Spider-Verse to that Hulk movie
in terms of trying to emulate
like they're both equal in quality.
They're both equally important.
Yeah, they have about the same amount of CG.
Yeah.
Fantastic.
I was going to touch on something that Lizzie said, which is how it is at least allowing young girls, or, you know, people of you know, different hues to see themselves as potential superheroes. I think that's the way, you know, the superhero industry has been going for a while, with, you know, Wonder Woman, you know, Captain Marvel is allowing young girls, or, you know, people of, you know, different skin pigmentation, see themselves and think, yeah, I mean, that can now be me. I think that was a very important point that Lizzie brought up. And I think previously, most, you know, before what, 5-10 years ago, mostly 5 years ago, besides Catwoman, it was pretty hard to
see.
Thought
you...
yeah. Like, you know, I would imagine, I mean, I'm not, I don't identify as a woman, but I would imagine it was pretty hard to see yourself as a superhero if you were a little girl. So I think that's great now. So yeah,
absolutely.
I mean, someone that is, and it was hard to see that. And I mean, there are female spider people in this. There are female, you know, book heroes coming out, and I think it's improvement, and I'm glad that people have that now.
I think it's improved both in representation and quality, because what was it, in the 2000s, you had Catwoman, Elektra.
It wasn't
must
a
be
good
a third
time.
One.
It was a dark time. Yeah.
When Limp Bizkit and Nickelback will play over the movies.
Very good recommendations, guys. And before we wrap up, as we talked about at the start of the show, there's obviously a lot of turmoil going on in the world right now. And a lot of it has spawned from what happened in America last week. Did you guys have the documentary you wanted to shout out, I believe?
Yeah, I've got a couple that I really like. So Black Panther is by Agnes Varda. I think is definitely worth the watch. Black Power Mixtape, 1967 to 1975 as well, by Goran Olsen, is also a very good documentary to watch. I think that's what's catching most people's attention these days. I think that's great. But also just watching, you know, a lot of stuff from Black filmmakers. I mean, go watch all your Spike Lee stuff, Ryan Coogler stuff, Barry Jenkins, go sort of watch all of that stuff, because more often than not, especially those type of filmmakers, Spike Lee and Barry Jenkins and Ryan Coogler, they tend to, you know, race tends to play a very significant part in a lot of their films. You think Ryan Coogler with Fruitvale Station, you think of Barry Jenkins with If Beale Street Could Talk, which, you know, If Beale Street Could Talk is very much, you know, what is going on now, with especially in relation to the police. But, as well as Spike Lee. Spike Lee was, you know, is one of my favorite filmmakers, and he was one of the first people to make films about, you know, like Black people being in the spotlight, and unapologetically so. Like he just made it really cool to sort of enjoy being Black. So yeah, go, you know, if you're interested, go watch a lot of those stuff. That's great.
Perfect, thank you. We have overrun a bit this week, but I just won't play any music. We won't have any music breaks, so it's fine. Blame Lizzie. It's because of Lizzie. No, thank you for returning, Lizzie, and thank you all for coming on this week.
Thanks for having me.
And thank you all for listening.